And now, it's time for our weekly news round, Lutheran Radio News with Paul Hill.
A biblical village where Jesus performed some of his most famous miracles really existed, and today lies in ruins only a mile from the Sea of Galilee, archaeologists believe. In the Bible, Bethsaida was home to disciples Peter, Andrew, and Philip, and was where Jesus fed the 5,000, walked on water, and helped a blind man to see. Archaeologists have been working for 32 years to find the lost city. Now Professor Rami Arav of the University of Nebraska says he is in no doubt that El Tal in the Golan Heights near the Jordan River estuary is the location of the biblical village. Ancient sources place several requirements for the identification of Bethsaida, Arav said, adding that finds in El Tal convince not only me, but a group of experts. To argue his case, Dr. Arav refers to the Roman historian Titus Flavius Josephus, who describes the location of Bethsaida in his writings. Josephus says that the town was in the Lower Golan, near the estuary of the Jordan River, said Dr. Arav, the same location as the El Tal dig site. The professor also highlights Josephus' description of how Bethsaida was later advanced into the dignity of a city and renamed Julius, after the wife of the Roman Emperor Augustus. At El Tal, the research team studying the location discovered a temple that was dedicated to Julia, Augustus's wife. The name Bethsaida translates as House of Fishing Hunting, said Dr. Arav, and believes this holds another clue. He contends that the ruins at El Tal were once known as Zer, which could also be described as Zed, a Hebrew word that means both hunting and fishing. This name, he believes, ultimately morphed into Beit Zed or Bethsaida. And though El Tal is over a mile from the Sea of Galilee, contrary to the biblical description of Bethsaida as a place accessible by boat, the dig site may have been closer in ancient times. The transformation, it's argued, can be explained by tectonic movements and changing water levels in the lake. Dr. Arav said, basically, you need to know that the Sea of Galilee is right in the middle of the Syro-African Rift and is prone to tectonic shifts. The researchers also discovered ancient fishing equipment among the ruins of the settlement. Jesus was said to have cursed the village, warning it faced worse treatment than Sodom, a city destroyed by God in the Old Testament. Although Bethsaida did not meet the calamitous end Jesus foretold, it was ultimately abandoned. Fortunately, Jesus did not say when the town would be destroyed, joked Dr. Arav. So in the 4th century, it was abandoned, and without maintenance, the buildings collapsed. The professor also threw down the gauntlet to archaeologists who claim the nearby site of El Araj is the true Bethsaida. He believes what they have actually found is a former military camp. This is an outstanding achievement, but it is not Bethsaida mentioned in the ancient sources, he said. They simply do not meet the prerequisites mentioned above, but they fit perfectly the military camp. I would also request that the directors of the dig at El Araj publish a peer-reviewed article stating their discoveries. They failed to do it so far, and everything the archaeological community knows about their finds comes from sketchy briefing by journalists in newspapers. This, of course, is not enough. The dig site at El Araj flooded earlier this summer, stopping excavations. Bethsaida, the biblical hometown to disciples Andrew, Peter and Philip, was where Jesus performed a number of miracles. It lies on the northeast shore of the Sea of Galilee at the terminus of the River Jordan, not too far from Capernaum, where Jesus spent much of his adulthood. The name Bethsaida means house of the fishermen in Hebrew. The miracles performed at Bethsaida included the feeding of the 5,000, in which Christ, following the death of John the Baptist, used 5 loaves and 2 fishes supplied by a boy to feed a crowd of his followers. Taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke them. Then he gave them to the disciples to distribute to the people. The event is described in Luke 9:16-17. They all ate and were satisfied, and the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. The Gospel of Mark, meanwhile, tells of a blind man of Bethsaida whose sight was restored after 2 blessings from Jesus. They came to Bethsaida, and some people brought a blind man and begged Jesus to touch him, begins Mark 8:22. He took the blind man by the hand and led him outside the village. When he had spit on the man's eyes and put his hands on him, Jesus asked, "Do you see anything?" He looked up and said, I see people. They look like trees walking about. Once more, Jesus put his hands on the man's eyes. Then his eyes were opened, his sight was restored, and he saw everything clearly. Jesus sent him home, saying, don't even go into the village. According to the Benedictine monk, St. Bede, the miracle serves as an example of how Christ teaches us how great is the spiritual blindness of man, which only by degrees and by successive stages can come to the light of divine knowledge. Also in Mark is a reference to Jesus walking on the water of the Sea of Galilee, a miracle performed in the wake of the feeding of the 5,000, after which Jesus has sent the disciples ahead of him to Bethsaida by boat. After leaving them, he went up on a mountainside to pray, begins Mark 6:45. Later that night, the boat was in the middle of the lake, and he was alone on land. He saw the disciples straining at the oars because the wind was against them. Shortly before dawn, he went out to them, walking on the lake. He was about to pass by them, but when they saw him walking on the lake, they thought he was a ghost, and they cried out because they all saw him and were terrified. Immediately he spoke to them and said, take courage, it is I, don't be afraid. Then he climbed into the boat with them, and the wind died down. According to Matthew, meanwhile, the area around Bethsaida is where Jesus began his public ministry, fulfilling the prediction of Isaiah that his people would see a great light. However, Jesus' preachings appear to have fallen largely on deaf ears by the time he came to make his final journey to Jerusalem. Woe to you, Bethsaida, Jesus is reported to have said in Luke 10:13. For if the miracles that were performed in you had been performed in Tyre and Sidon, they would have repented long ago, sitting in sackcloth and ashes. An elderly couple have been granted permission to reserve grave plots next to their sons, despite parishioners saying it would be unsightly. The Church of England's Consistory Court granted the parents the right to be buried next to their son, who was killed in a street shooting in the United States of America. The son, named in court documents as James Cooper, had just turned 25 when he and a friend were shot dead while holidaying in Florida in 2011. He was buried in the churchyard at Hampton Lucy near Stratford-upon-Avon. His parents, now in their 60s, have lived in the parish for 14 years and want to be buried next to him when their time comes. However, the court heard objections from two parishioners who challenged their right to reserve plots next to that of their son in the country churchyard. The vicar of St. Peter and Vincula, the Reverend Andrew Larkin, and the parochial church council, the PCC, supported the plea by Stanley Cooper and his wife when they applied to reserve grave space. However, Chris Robinson, a former church warden and treasurer, objected to the grant of consent, claiming it would breach church regulations and that Mr. and Mrs. Cooper either do not understand or accept that these regulations, applied impartially, are for the benefit of all. Another objector, named as Mrs. G. Speller, who helps tidy the churchyard, claimed allowing the reserved grave space would have an adverse effect on the appearance of the churchyard because it would leave a gap in an otherwise continuous row of graves. She said it would also hinder the maintenance of the graveyard. However, Stephen Eyre, QC, Chancellor of the Diocese of Coventry, in his role as a judge of the Consistory Court, rejected both objections and granted the wishes of Mr. and Mrs. Cooper. He said that rather than the couple not understanding the regulations, it was Mr. Robinson who had either misunderstood the effect, adding, Mr. Robinson's objections appear to be based on a number of misunderstandings, and I can attach little weight to them. Mr. Eyre said Mrs. Speller had raised practical and aesthetic concerns, but continued, any aesthetic effect will be modest, and the extent to which the reservation will hinder the maintenance of the churchyard will also be modest. He added that Mr. and Mrs. Cooper had responded to the objections by pointing out in restrained but powerful terms the depth of their grief at the untimely loss of their only son, explaining that knowing they would be buried alongside him will provide them with a modest degree of comfort. He added, the objections cannot prevail against the powerful considerations in favour of the grant of the reservation sought, and a faculty or permission will be granted. 130-year-old legend that the heart of one of Belgium's founding fathers was placed in a fountain that commemorates him has turned out to be true after it was found by workmen. Pierre David was the first mayor of Verviers after the Belgian Revolution, when the country gained its independence from the Netherlands. A story dating to the 19th century said that his heart was bricked up in the city's Fontaine David. This was confirmed when the casket was discovered 2 weeks ago. A legend has thus become reality, Maxime Diguet, the councillor in charge of public works in Verviers, said. Mr. Diguet said that the casket had been found close to a bust of David behind a stone that we had removed as part of the renovation. The workers immediately secured this casket, which was in truly immaculate condition, he added. David was a founding father of Belgium and represented Verviers at a national congress that agreed the country's constitution in 1830, although he backed a republic rather than the parliamentary monarchy it became. As Verviers' mayor in the aftermath of the revolution, he brokered peace, built innovative industrial zones and residential districts for workers, created the city's fire brigade and a secondary school system. Unusually for the time, he insisted that all municipal meetings were open to public record, and the front of the city's town hall bears the motto, "Transparency protects the people." David died at age 68 in 1839, when a shutter from his house fell on his head. The accident happened 3 years after he was re-elected as mayor, and the city was plunged into mourning. City historians had also known that David's heart was removed with the intention of placing it in a monument. A few days after his death, by decision of the municipal council of the time, and with the agreement of the family, three surgeons opened the coffin of Pierre David to take his heart, and placed it in a box with the aim of placing it in a monument, Paul Berthelet, a historian, said. It was never confirmed that it had been placed in the fountain, which was built 44 years later. The casket will go on show in the city's Museum of Fine Arts and Ceramics tomorrow before being returned to its place in the restored Fontaine David by early next month. They have already proved a godsend for consumers during the lockdown, but Alexa and other smart speakers may also be the answer to our spiritual needs, a chaplain to the Queen has claimed. The Very Reverend Dr. John Chalmers, a former moderator of the General Assembly of the Church of Scotland, said that faith organisations would have to embrace new technologies if they were to survive in the post-COVID world. He also warned that lockdown could send numbers for Sunday morning worship tumbling in the same way that popular TV dramas hit evening attendances 50 years ago. Writing in this month's Life and Work, the house magazine of the Church of Scotland, Dr. Chalmers said that during lockdown, more people have been tuning into religion online. These days, more and more people are tuning into Alexa, and other brands are available for advice, he writes. If you ask Alexa to say a prayer for you, she replies, "I have a few skills that can help you with that." And from there, you can open a link to the Church of England, or you can hear passages read from the Quran or the Bible. He added, "Now that our church doors are being swung open again, there are big questions about how quickly our pews will be repopulated." Back in the 1960s, nearly every congregation in the Church of Scotland had well-attended evening services. Then, from January to July 1967, the BBC screened the Forsyth Saga in 26 Sunday night episodes. 26 weeks was more than enough to change the Sunday evening habits of families across the nation. We should not be blind to the possibility that the lockdown associated with COVID-19 could do to our Sunday morning habits what the Forsyth Saga did to our Sunday evening habits. The current moderator, the Right Reverend Dr. Martin Fair, also believes that online technology is playing a big part in spreading the word. Through July and August, he has appeared in several hundred digital pulpits and in dozens of Zoom conversations. Dr. Fair said, "Even in the midst of a crisis or seeming disaster, there are almost always positive ways to respond and new ways of doing things." However, one clergyman, the Reverend Marcus Alferman of Woodside Parish Church in Aberdeen, warned that the new ways of communication were not for everybody, and that many parishioners still want to be reached in the good old-fashioned way of personal contact. A 2017 survey showed that the number of people who regularly attended church services in Scotland had fallen by more than half over the past 30 years. The research also revealed that 42% of churchgoers were over 65. And finally, An airplane flew into a violent thunderstorm and was soon swaying and bumping around the sky. One very nervous lady happened to be sitting next to Pastor Jamie, and she turned to him. "Can't you do something?" she demanded angrily. "I'm sorry, madam," Pastor Jamie said gently. "I'm in sales, not management." My name is Paul Hill. Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK. Lutheran Radio News will be back next Friday. Until then, every blessing to you and goodbye for now.